Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Friday, November 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Democrat Joe Biden will address the nation tonight as he stands on the edge of the presidency. Meanwhile, Republican incumbent Donald Trump predicts a lot of litigation. What a week it's been. This has been one for the books. It's our Week in Review program today, and we'll run down some of the big events, and you can guess what they are, with Judy Patrick from the New York Press Association. And this is a chance for you to express a few thoughts about what happened this week, probably about the presidential campaigns. You give us a call, 800-348-2551, if you want to weigh in, 800-348-2551. Alan Chartok will join us as well. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551, right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us to discuss quite a week is the New York Press Association's Judy Patrick and WAMC's Alan Chartok. Judy Patrick is a vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association, where she works to support the work of journalists at the hundreds of daily and weekly newspapers across New York State. For more than 40 years, she worked as a journalist at daily newspapers, leaving the Daily Gazette in Schenectady as editor-in-chief in 2018. Alan Chartok, well, you know Alan Chartok. He gets around. You've heard of him. The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's the Week in Review today. And really, there is one big, big story. Judy Patrick generally gives me a list of five for this program. But Judy Patrick, first, welcome to the show. And second of all, let's just cut to the chase, huh?
Well... You're right. We can. It's a beautiful day. We can. The story of the week is the American people elected a president this week. We're not exactly sure who that is yet, and all the other stories emanate from that.
Alan Chartok, you know, as I have often mentioned, you have been following these things since Millard Fillmore's administration.
I have. Yeah, he was quite a guy.
Have you seen a week like this in quite some time?
Well, not only have I never not seen such a thing, but I have to tell you, it has more importance as a political event than any other single thing that I have ever seen, because I think that this country was on the verge of going in a very bad direction if he had been reelected. While Judy was being careful, I think the die is cast. I think Biden's going to be the president. I think Trump is going to act out even more and more infantile than he has been up until now, but we're sitting on top of it.
Now, Joe Biden is scheduled to address the nation this evening in primetime, I believe at 8, which we will, of course, carry for you here. Judy Patrick, do you expect this to be a victory speech or just, hey, hang on, it'll be victory soon?
You know, from what we're hearing, the state of Pennsylvania is expected to announce far more, a great many votes by 5 o'clock this afternoon. I know that everybody's talking about every vote has to count, but for people who've covered elections or watched elections carefully, it takes weeks to count every single vote. What you need to have is one candidate has to have more votes than the other candidate compared to the amount of votes that are left over to count. And, you know, if somebody's ahead by 100,000 votes and there's 10,000 more to count, then you don't you can declare a victor without counting all. You'll eventually count them all, and in a couple of weeks we'll see who the real, you know, the totals in New York State. They're still counting votes, but we've declared New York State is a Biden state. So it's important that every vote eventually count, but when it comes to the networks declaring of victor, that's what they're looking at. They're looking at margins. Board of Elections, they certify election results, but that happens in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Judy, because as always, you're the best. And I just follow on your heels and say what she said is right.
You know, getting to what Judy said, New York, yeah, none of the states have fully counted every vote. But we all watched the elections, the election returns Tuesday. As soon as New York closed, 0% in, Biden's checked off. As soon as California closes, 0% in, Biden's checked off. But Alan, how do they do that?
Well, here's the problem. We have something called the Electoral College. Everybody, including the governor, has decided this is a very bad thing, and that we in New York State, Massachusetts, where I live, are getting screwed because our vote counts for a lot less than somebody from tiny Rhode Island. We know that. We also know that in terms of projections, we can pretty well tell how many blue people live in New York and how many blue people, as Selma Kaplan used to say, live in other states. These results, Georgia and Pennsylvania, but Georgia in particular, is really incredible.
And of course, in Georgia, we have some Senate things going on, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's grab a phone call here, and then we'll take a break and have some more discussion about Nancy Pelosi's future and things like that. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's the Week in Review. Judy Patrick is here from the New York Press Association and WAMC's Alan Shartok. We start out with Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question.
Okay.
That has to do with the presidency, and if the president-elect is incapacitated or dies before the inauguration, I want to know what the protocol is for, where do we go from there? Who's next? Is it the vice president? Or is it the person who received the second largest amount of votes?
Well, it certainly isn't the person who received the second amount of votes. I'm speaking through my hat, and I just probably don't know the answer. But I think what would happen is that the Democratic National Committee would choose the person who they would designate as their person next up. I am sure it would be Kamala Harris. I am sure of that. One way or another, they'll get to her.
I think the 20th Amendment, I'm going just by notes here, says that if the president dies between Election Day and Inauguration Day, the vice president-elect would act until Congress certifies a winner.
Well,
so I guess the House would then pick at that point, but it would
it depends what you mean by the Congress. You know, we always refer to Congress as both. Congress is technically both houses of the national legislature, but we refer to the House of Representatives as the Congress quite often. So,
all right, well, Harriet, I know that's a good one, but I bet one listener of ours will do some Googling. Let's take a break while the Googling commences. Thank you very much for the call. Judy Patrick is here. Alan Shartok is here. It's the Week in Review. And frankly, we know what the top story is. So let's take a break and we'll take your calls. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop Week in Review with Judy Patrick and Alan Shartok. The number is 800-348-2551. This email came in, and then we'll jump back to the phones here. And this gets to a topic that Judy had on her list. This is from Carolyn in Cambridge, New York, who says, thank WAMC for helping maintain sanity these past 4 years. It's our pleasure. I only wish I could share your sanity. Carolyn writes, please comment on the Dems' miserable showing in state legislatures in view of upcoming redistricting due to census results. It seems that with GOP operatives in the lead on these efforts, this will keep Democrats in the minority for congressional districts with more seats for the pending minority white population and fewer seats for majority Democrats of many hues. And that is from Carolyn. Judy.
Yeah, the Democrats thought they were going to sweep a lot of these races and in Congress too, and they didn't. I think it's time for a real reckoning or a self analysis on the Democrats' part, because they thought because of Trump and the divisiveness of his administration and all the scandals, as well as the pandemic, that people would rise up and vote Democratic, but that was not resonating with voters. I mean, they appear to have won the presidency. It's not clear yet, but they didn't do as well as they could. In fact, in the House of Representatives, Pelosi lost ground. In the Senate, it's still kind of a toss-up. But the idea that, I mean, that people were talking about the Democrats controlling the House, the Senate, and the presidency just a week ago, and that does not appear to be something that's going to happen.
You know, Judy, there are a lot of Republicans who obviously voted for Biden, And I have a feeling that some of these results have, okay, I'll vote for Biden because this other guy is so terrible, because I truly think this was a referendum, not on Biden, a referendum on Trump. In other words, you know, people didn't want him and they were throwing him out, but a lot of them had guilt about it, and so they split their ballots.
There was an AP piece today that says House Democrats are casting blame for a disappointing election that cut into their majority. They said it was the election message, the ground game, and the leadership under Speaker Nancy Pelosi's team that cost them seats. Alan, time in a month or 2 months, is she still the leader of that House?
Well, I would hope so. I think she's done a terrific job. She stood up to Trump when nobody else was doing it. If I were, as I said earlier today, if I were in the House, I would certainly vote for her. Judy?
Yeah, and in fact, I think it's every 2 years it's time to beat up on Nancy Pelosi again. I think the real problem with the Democratic performance this year was their message. And I know I'll get beat up on this one, but I think it's too progressive for a lot of people that those voices are coming out too loudly. This whole idea about defunding the police and the fact that they may be socialists, they did not counter that message strongly enough, and that's where they lost votes. Just look at the down in Southern Florida, why they lost votes. But now, and I want to ask you a thing. Trump gained voters. You know, he has more votes in the states. He lost, but he gained votes. And I thought that his base was pretty solid and he couldn't expand it, but somehow he was able to do it. What do you think happened there?
Well, this is an election where if you give people a choice, they'll come out. When you don't get a choice, they don't come out. Well, this was the choice of choices of choices of choices. And they came out and the Democrats came out and the Democratic constituencies came out in a really aggressive way. So it's true that Trump people came out, but more Democrats came out and more of the undecideds went to the Democrats. I just think it was one of those elections when the future of the country was at stake and people were deciding that this clown, this president, who could well, in my opinion, lead us into fascism and had to go.
Now, I must admit to you both, Judy Patrick and Alan Shartok, that I was called on the carpet by a listener in Greenwich this week on the comment line who said, Ray Graff on Box Top asks too many questions. It is Vox Pop, by the way, with a V and a P, not Box Top. So let's go back to the phones. And Dan in Middletown.
Just a couple of things I have to say.
Oh, no.
Housekeeping.
All right.
One, we all love you, Ray, and we think you're doing a terrific job.
Oh, boy.
And you are as good at this job as anybody I have ever known,
I'm fired.
Including me. And you are terrific.
Okay.
Okay, number one. And number two, happy birthday to our Ian Pickus, who is...
35 tomorrow. Old enough to be prez.
35. He could be president. I admire him without reservation.
Now, meanwhile, Dan from Middletown is being very quiet. Are you still there, Dan?
I still am, and technically I'm halfway between Middletown and Monticello, but we'll let that pass.
Go ahead, man.
You didn't let it pass.
Well, I had to make my point. Question for you. I don't expect you to be able to explain the reason, but I think a lot of people were astounded by the discrepancy in polling versus the actual result. And I'm interested in both from a media and a political standpoint. What do you think the ramifications will be for that going forward?
Judy, do you want to go first?
Yeah, we talked about this at length in this week's Media Project, which airs Sunday night and Monday afternoon. But perhaps as all the numbers come in, maybe the polling numbers will have held up better. But there's no denying that the pollsters got Florida wrong. They got a number of really important battleground states wrong. And my position on polling has been that we focus too much on polling, and it. Not enough on the real issues of the campaign. It makes it look like running for president is watching a race at the Saratoga racetrack.
Mm. Well, I take a slightly different tact, although my admiration for Judy is unlimited.
Of course. Here we go, Judy.
Yeah,
wait for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think polling is here to stay. I think what they got wrong was they had no idea, Judy, about what the turnout was going to be here.
That was a big wild card, yeah.
Referring to, you know, to previous callers. This was the future of the United States. The future of this country was at stake, this, and everybody knew it on all sides. I think the white male population knew it, and we know where they were. And I think everybody else, because this is a transitional election. We know that one of the reasons Donald Trump was so important here is that the country was going through a catharsis in which they were going to end up being ruled by all kinds and shades of people. And this was their last chance to put a stop to that from the white male minority. That's what I think happened.
Dan, are you in Monticello yet?
I am coming up on the hour, and that was a very interesting point you made, and I tend to agree with you. I think that that population is aging out.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
There's some data out of a political scientist from the University of Florida who said it was more than 160 million people voted on Tuesday for a turnout rate of 66.9%.
Unbelievable.
That's the highest in 120 years. With back in 1900, 73% of the voters turned out. So great voter turnout. There's that.
And that's a good thing. That's democracy in action.
It
right?
is. But Judy's point is so well taken, because in normal presidential elections, it's hovers around and sometimes goes lower than 50%.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're talking about 63%, that's really quite something.
An energized electorate. Let's go to Drew in Saratoga Springs. Drew, you're on.
Hey there. You guys can hear me all right?
You betcha.
Yeah.
All right, great. So, look, I'm a 19-year-old kid, and I've heard the same thing from a lot of people my age, which is essentially that people are really tired of how polarized our current political economy is. And really, I think what we're all sort of agreeing on, at least from what I've heard, is that nobody really knows what real tangible good the two-party system has done for our political environment. And I'm wondering, what would our politics look like without the party system? What would what kind of good could we do in terms of mending our nation's soul, in terms of bettering relations between Republicans and Democrats, you know? I think that there's too much hate in our country between these two parties, and I'd like to see what sort of things we can do to fix that.
Let's let both our sage panelists answer. Judy Patrick, you first.
Well, Alan knows more about the political history of parties, but I would say that you do see that there are problems that the political parties create, because what you tend to have is, you know, people don't go in and vote their conscience. They vote what their party leadership tells them to vote. But over time, the parties have come to represent different values. Republicans tend to be fiscally conservative. The Democrats tend to support more social programs. Those lines have gotten blurred under the Trump presidency. A multi-party system, you would encourage coalitions, but that's not something this nation has had for, I mean, in the early days, we had more than two parties, but again, I defer to Alan. He's the political historian.
We all defer
more
to
than
Alan
I.
all the time.
Right. And, you know, we had a really, truly incredible president for our very first, and he said that we shouldn't be operating under parties that can divide each other.
Well, that's right.
We shouldn't be operating in massive big buildings that can be targets for foreign enemies. And I don't think we've listened to lot of our founding fathers' lessons.
Professor Dr. Mr. Chartok, what do you think?
No, he's right. He's absolutely right. George Washington, in his farewell address, warned about factions, meaning parties, and was not, did not anticipate that what was going to happen is we were going to choose up teams the way that this country has. His point and your point, is right. We didn't know it, but it's just sort of happened, and it isn't going away. And we're not going to go to a multi-party system, and we are not going to get rid of our political parties. What happens is Watergate. We saw it. Now we're seeing it. People go off the track, and they get beat up a little bit, and then they come back.
This email came in from Eric in Ulster County, and Eric says, yes, I agree totally. Finally, someone said it. Thank you, Judy. The Democratic Party failed to win state houses and failed to win more national offices because the left part of the Democratic Party is too scary for most. Social change is a slow process, and immigrants will tend to be conservative. If the Democratic Party does not moderate, the Republicans will continue to grow and dominate. And that's from Eric in Ulster County. Judy Patrick, you first.
Yeah, it's just something I've heard from too many real people I talk to, that they, you know, they just are worried that the Democrats are going too, or pushing it too far. I mean, I'm not even sure everybody understands what the main Democratic message are. Certainly they misunderstood the defund police message, which wasn't defunding the police. It was, you know, thinking about how they spend money devoted to, you know, public safety. So I do think that is a real issue they have to face, and it's something Biden's going to have to, he's going to have his hands full with this one, and so is Pelosi. But she in the past has proven very adept at bringing different factions under her wing and making real things happen.
You got to choose your words. I think what you're saying Judy, is that when people say certain things, they have to choose their words carefully. If you say defund the police and say, well, we really didn't mean defund the police, well, then don't say defund the police.
You make a point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it gets crazy. I want to say one thing.
Yeah.
I think the choice of Joe Biden, I've said it all along, was brilliant on the part of the American people. Joe Biden is a moderate. He's a moderate. And this is a moderate country. And if it had been a more progressive candidate, I know people will disagree with this, but if it had been a more progressive candidate, the Democrats would not have had a chance here. So Biden did it. And now, because Biden is the president and a moderate, Ray, he has an opportunity to really, as an ex-senator who really knows the system, to negotiate with Mitch McConnell and the others. It was a very good choice.
Get some things done, you mean?
Yes.
Yes. All right, I don't want to ask too many questions, but I'll ask Judy and then you can follow up here. Given the general polling that showed a majority of Americans were not happy with the way President Trump handled COVID and the pandemic, Judy Patrick, and given how close that this election is, and it still is, does Biden win without the pandemic?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And that is one of the things that kind of a lot of people who have been so upset and frankly, very, very concerned about the fate of our country over how President Trump has managed this. I think without COVID, I think he would have won re-election. The economy was going very well, and people were not paying attention to the scandals, to the, you know, to the, there were outrages there. And I'm sure Alan is far more outspoken on this issue as well. But I think without the pandemic, Trump would have won re-election.
All right, Alan, we have to go to Rich in Burlington, but you go ahead and give us your thoughts.
To
on
which
this.
I say, if Schmiff, that's the way it was. And, you know, there'd be 1,000 things you could say if Trump had behaved and had done something.
Canceled his Twitter account, for instance,
done
3
something
years ago.
For the American people on COVID, he would have won.
All right, let's go to Rich in Burlington. Rich, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm a big fan of WMC and especially Vox Pop and round table panel. You know, I'm from Vermont, unabashed, progressive. We're very proud of that up here. And I think we do got some big problems, systemic racism and, you know, climate crisis, existential climate crisis, as well as, you know, a need for universal health care. But my question is, Preet Bharara, I miss his reasoned voice. What do you guys think is the chance we get him back into some kind of either the U.S. government or back? I guess he wasn't, you know, an employee of the U.S. government. Getting him back in New York or even on a more national stage.
All right, Judy Patrick first and then Alan Shartok second.
Well, you know, I follow Preet on Twitter, so I don't miss him. I hear from him all the time, and he also has a podcast that he does. Who's going to go back into the as a U.S. attorneys under the Biden if Biden assumes the presidency? There's all sorts of maneuverings going on to see who shows up where. But I encourage you, if you're on Twitter, follow him because he always has a very astute observations about what's happening.
I agree. He's terrific. He has a contract with CNN, I believe. I think his brother's a brain surgeon. I'm not exactly sure. There's a little bit of competition there.
Terrific.
I may be wrong. I may be wrong about that, but he is terrific.
Which you may be right.
But if he were offered, Judy, the Attorney Generalship of the United States, he'd take it in New York minute.
Rich, thanks for the call. Alan, what about your buddy Andy? Is he going to get a gig?
Oh, I think so.
You think so?
I think he can have what he and Biden are very close friends. It's really sort of ironic because had Trump won, then in 4 years, I hate to start this stuff already.
Oh, here we go. You did this yesterday. Yeah.
Then I asked him the question and I said, "Don't hang up on me." And he said, "Click." It was very funny.
I'll bet you, Alan, I'll bet you whatever. I'll bet you a hummus sandwich that
Governor,
Governor Cuomo stays put. I think I'm taking him at his word. He loves being governor. He's going to stay being governor.
Well, it depends what he gets offered. If he's offered the attorney general's job, it's very hard for him to turn that down, I think.
All right, one more call here, and then we will take a break, and then we'll take some more calls and emails and whatnot. Let's go to Howard New Paltz. Howard, you're up.
Oh, hi, Judy Patrick. I just want to make it short. I have a problem with news in general. It's kind of being in balance where they're always talking about people testing positive, but 80% of them are just, it's false positive. So how can they say, they leave out the part that maybe they don't have the disease, but they don't put that on the press. And I can't understand why they don't do that.
Yeah, Judy, well, take it.
Yeah, well, it's not that they're false positive. They're positive. And when you're positive, it doesn't. You may be asymptomatic, but you can still spread the disease. So that's why it's important to know how many people are positive. People also talk about the fact that, the number of people actually dying, we're talking about COVID, I'm thinking, the number of people who are actually dying has the percentage has gone down from the high that it was back in May and June. But I will note that yesterday, more than 1,000 people in the United States died from COVID. That's the third day in a row that we've gone above 1,000. And yesterday, we had 120,000 new infections. Hospitalizations are going up across the country. Sure, some people get a mild case. Some people have no symptoms. But even if you have no symptoms, if you're positive, you can spread this disease, and you can spread it to someone who's vulnerable who may die of it. So I think that's why it's important. I think you have to put everything like that, those kind of statistics in perspective. And if anything, this election and the COVID scenario has taught us is the fact that maybe we should all be teaching statistics in high school rather than maybe calculus.
Okay, Alan, I believe you have something to say.
I have this to say, what Judy said.
Okay, and are you...
I'm off to the dentist. I'm so sorry.
Are you really?
I do apologize.
Do you use the anesthesia?
Well, I went to a different dentist yesterday. He was a specialist. You see, I go back to my regular dentist today.
Okay, well, enjoy yourself. I hope it's not
a root canal.
Our
thoughts are with you, Alan.
Our number is 800-348-255. Alan, thanks for being here. 800-348-2551 is our number. We'll take a quick break while Alan departs. Judy Patrick is sticking around. Many more calls to get to. Some more email. We'll be back. Vox Pop, it's the Week in Review with Judy Patrick, Ray Graff here. Alan Shartok's heading to the dentist. Our number is 800-348-2551. It should be noted, Judy, I'm getting some emails of support, even though I might ask too many questions. Several people have written in, and I would just suggest to those people, make sure you make those directly to Alan and put, "The dude needs a raise" in the subject heading, okay? Let's see, this email from Malcolm. Malcolm says, I find a missing piece of analysis is the role that propaganda has played in this election, especially the lack of a blue wave. This has affected everything from Trump voters, QAnon being more polarized, and many non-Trump people having doubts about the Democrats. It even includes those who chose economics over morals, who were failing for or falling for the lies about Trump being a boon to the economy. I love the show, and that's from Malcolm in Amherst. Judy.
Well, there certainly was a lot of misinformation out there, although, you know, I almost expected it to be worse than it was. I tried, as much as I tried to stay off social media, it's kind of like a job requirement for me to dive in there and see what's happening, and I, you know, and try to counter any untruths that I saw. And there were a substantial amount of it, but I, you know, sadly, I find that people are sticking to their own channels and they're not, you know, sharing as much of it as they should. I also think going forward, we really need to work on this. And as a country, as every single citizen needs to work harder to really ferret out the truth from lies. And it's not easy. Sometimes you have to read a big, long article to find the truth. But
you'd like to, as a newspaper editor, you want that, right?
Or listen to a long documentary, or you know, listen to the entire Vox Pop or the entire roundtable. I mean, I think that you can't get the truth sometimes in a 30-second political commercial. That's giving you propaganda.
I think the lesson here, Judy, is you can't get the truth unless you want the truth. You have to work for it sometimes, right?
Yeah. And you know, and it's often not black or white. It's in shades of grays, and that's what makes a lot of things a lot more complicated.
You think there are 50 shades of gray?
Oh, here we go.
All right, let's go to Deanne in West Sand Lake. Deanne, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
You betcha.
Okay, great. First, I want to say I agree with you all about Nancy Pelosi. I think she has been great, and I hope she'll still be in charge. And my question is about all these lawsuits that Trump is pulling out at the voting places and all different things he's coming up with. I'm just wondering how much can that actually delay the result?
No, these lawsuits can't stop the voting. They can't delay the results. And as I said, these results don't get certified for a couple of weeks. And then, if you remember, there's actually a real electoral college with people called electors that go and will actually vote. It's all mostly ceremonial. I mean, if you remember, they did shut down the counting in Florida back in 2000.
Yep.
But that was a different set of circumstances. In these cases, a couple of the lawsuits the Trump campaign has filed have already been resolved. I'm expecting the other ones to be resolved fairly quickly. Now, some of them could be appealed to the Supreme Court, but then they have to decide whether or not to take it. So it doesn't seem like there's I'm not hearing any legal scholars saying that there's a lot of oomph to any of these lawsuits.
Deanne, thanks for the call. Judy, Patrick, we have heard and we will hear Joe Biden address the nation. We've heard it's going to be around 8 o'clock tonight. Do you think he's got the inside info and that that they're going to call this thing before then?
What I was reading earlier in the afternoon was that he like everybody else, is watching the networks and listening to the radio and waiting for, you know, believe it or not, people wait for the Associated Press or the networks to call it, because that's historically what has happened. It's easier when your opponent, who is losing, concedes, but it's very clear that President Trump is not going to come out and concede at any point. I think that if the shoe were on the other foot, like it was 4 years ago when Hillary Clinton was behind, she conceded, and that makes the whole world easier for every political reporter out there, for every citizen, for the person to concede. If you remember that at one point, Bush conceded back in the Bush-Gore days. So concessions aren't always, you know, cast in stone, but are set in stone. But I think that he's waiting and he's thinking. What do I know? But I'm thinking that the Pennsylvania results, if he gets Pennsylvania, if there's enough of a margin he's ahead by to offset whatever's outstanding, I think the networks or the Associated Press especially would call that. And then once Pennsylvania goes, then he has enough to to declare victory or to accept the presidency. That doesn't mean the county is not going to continue, and it's possible that one of these errant lawsuits might find success, but lawsuits tend to only challenge, you know, a few hundred votes, and if it's only a matter of a few hundred votes, it's not going to affect the outcome of the race. There's some of these races, especially in Georgia, where it's a few thousand votes. Those are really slim margins, but at this point, if Biden gets Pennsylvania, he doesn't necessarily need Georgia.
All right, let me ask you a question. You were a newspaper person for a long time. You're still with the New York Press Association. Why does every network rely on the AP to call it?
So, this time they did not, but for historically, AP has been calling races for more than 100 years, and they did a really strong outreach this year to explain to people how they work and why you should trust the results. They called Arizona early for Biden on Tuesday night.
Right.
And Fox News did as well. And Fox works with AP on this one. They stood by their Arizona call. I checked this afternoon to see where they stood on Arizona. They said they're watching it, but they haven't called it back. So AP traditionally has had people at almost every polling place. And I can remember being in Montgomery County here in New York State, and AP hires stringers to go out and get the actual results and call them in. They call, every House of Representatives, every senator race. They call the state races. I mean, it's in a very elaborate process, and it's evolved over time. They work with the University of Chicago, and they've developed this system that over time has proven to be pretty darn accurate.
And yet CNN still hasn't called Arizona. It's off here in Studio A, and it just went by on the crawl. So we will see. Let's go to Bruce in Kingston. Bruce, you're on.
Yeah, first I want to agree with Alan that Ray Graff does a great job whenever he's on. I love hearing.
Well, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
But the election.
Yeah.
If the runoff of the Georgia Senate race in January takes place and they manage to tie, Kamala Harris would, be put into the deciding vote. I'd like to see what the first thing that the Senate would do to declare whatever they have to go through Washington, D.C., a state, and Puerto Rico, a state. And that would add four more senators, which would probably be Democratic, and then they could deal with the Supreme Court after that. And the other thing is, when I haven't heard many people or anybody really talk about this, whether given the races and the depth and the broad and depth of the racism in this country, whether people are afraid that Kamala Harris may become the next president, and that's a possibility. And the third thing is, does anybody know why the Democrats didn't have a major Latino Julian Castro Miami and talk to the Latinos there and in other places on the circuit, on the election circuit? I haven't talked about heard why they didn't do that.
All right, we better stop you at three, or else we won't remember what one was. Judy, you go ahead.
Well, when it comes to the Latino or Latinx folk, I think that there were efforts made, but whether they obviously weren't good enough, especially in Florida. Remember, this might be off point a little bit, but Bloomberg was spending $100 million just in Florida in support of the Democratic cause. But, you know, it just goes to prove that money doesn't always get you what you need. It didn't work in Maine.
McConnell's case.
Yeah, or in Lindsey Graham's case. Jamie Harris spent $109 million and Graham spent $74 million. In Georgia, both Senate races are still open, and there appears to be a runoff in
January.
January, that will decide the fate of the Senate. Right now, I guess they're There's four remaining races, except they're not calling the Alaska race yet because all the votes aren't in yet, but it appears the Republican will win, and it looks like Tillis is going to win in North Carolina. But you've got these two races in Georgia. It will be quite interesting to see what happens there. But you can watch the money flow down to Georgia in the next couple of months, and yeah. We're going to be hearing more about Georgia than we probably want to.
How many votes, by the way, are in Alaska? Why is it when they have three people counting votes? Well, it should be done by now, right?
It's a geographically diverse country with remote areas. All I got to see. Maybe the internet's not. I don't want to say bad things about Alaska.
Okay.
It's a great state.
I'm just saying it's taking a while. You got to figure there's not that many people. Get her done, Matt in Albany.
Yeah,
Matt, you're on.
Hi. First of all, I just wanted to say to the 19-year-old gentleman who called earlier, good for him.
Yeah.
And I tip my hat to the young man for getting interested in politics at 19. It's admirable. And I think he's going to find that it's not that politics is tough or bad, but it's that people make things political, and that's the issue. But anyway, my question to you folks, a little brevity in this tense time. If you could pick a Joe Biden cabinet dream team, who would be on that team? And I'm sad that Alan is not here to answer, but I will take whatever you guys have.
Well, let me answer for Alan. Alan thinks Alan should be on the cabinet. All right, Judy, what do you think?
Oh, well, let's see. You've got the Attorney General. You've got the Secretary of State. I mean, I would. I think Elizabeth Warren, I like her her background in consumer affairs. I think she would be good for Treasury, but a lot of people view her as too progressive. For Attorney General, there's a lot of great attorneys out there who would fight for good causes. You got House and Human. Let's make Dr. Fauci head of the FDA.
Speaking of Fauci, did you see what Bannon said?
Oh Lord, I did.
Yeah.
He said, and then, he said something, I actually listened to it because I couldn't believe he actually said it. It was on a podcast. He suggested that Fauci and Christopher Wray, the head of the FBI, they should be beheaded and have their heads put on spikes.
Now, that was in jest, right?
I'm sure it was in jest. He didn't chuckle after it, though, and it was, not everybody... probably would have. There are some people who are not evolved enough to understand that might have been in jest. And there's some. Not everybody. That's a dangerous thing to say. Is my position.
Agreed. Maybe we can have a new power couple: Steve Bannon and Kathy Griffin. What do you think?
Exactly. Kathy Griffin got pilloried for that.
Well, yes. Let's go to Kathleen in Voorheesville. Kathleen.
Hi. I have several points to make.
All right, we don't have much time, so let's cut to the chase.
I know. Real quick. One, defunding, I think, was bad language. I totally agree with Alan. Two, I think disinformation was huge. People I know who were more Trumpian said Trump could do nothing about the pandemic, and the socialism label totally stuck, even though it was inappropriate. People believed the lies. And the major thing I wanted to say was that the Writers Institute is running an online information thing with different sessions called Telling the Truth 2020, Conversations on the Toxic Divisions of America's Political Landscape.
Ah.
See NewYorkStateWritersInstitute.org, and I'm really looking forward to hearing those.
That's a nice little plug there, Kathleen. Thank you for the call. And quickly now over to Ken in Boston Lake. Ken.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing today? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The younger voter before the 19-year-old, it reminded me of something my daughter said, who's also 19. She said a lot of her friends weren't going to vote. They said they don't relate to any of this. And I'm just wondering, how do we get those young people involved? And my daughter voted, and the Democratic Party, it'd be great if they could figure that out. And I guess the other thing are black males. She said that she talked to a lot of her black friends, male friends, young black male friends, and said, they couldn't relate to either candidate. Anyway, that's all I have to say, and I would love your opinions on that.
Judy Patrick.
Yeah, getting young people to vote has been a historic problem. They tend to be apathetic. You have seen efforts by all sorts of groups over the years to try to get that vote out, to get them registered. And sometimes they run into problems, especially if they're at college. This year, when they were at college, they didn't know whether they'd be at college, whether they could vote there, whether they should do absentee ballots. I have thought that maybe climate, they're concerned about the climate going forward, what kind of a world they're going to inherit is something that would make them be more concerned about politics. And even school shootings, there was some down in Florida, you saw some activism arise out of that. But I'll be interested to see what the numbers are this time. There were some indications that there was a greater interest this time. When I was at the grocery store just yesterday, I saw two clerks who were stocking shelves. They were young men, probably in their early 20s, and they were checking their phones for the results of the election. So that gave me it made me step a little lighter. So
yeah, you know, and I think that this has been an energizing event for a lot of people, including some young people. I have one of my daughters who won't be able to vote for a couple of years. She's been glued to the TV watching these results. And I think that ultimately, yeah, it's like a horse race. Yeah, it's like a football game to some extent. But, you know, it energizes people to think about issues. Maybe you go in the other direction and then you vote. So not bad.
Agreed. Yeah, get them involved. It's their country.
Hey, Judy Patrick, we are out of time here, but thank you for being with us. And, well, you better go back to your election results now, and we'll talk to you soon.
You are welcome. Thank you, Ray.
See ya. Support comes from Enchanting Escapes, independent local travel advisory company working to help people design travel experiences, specializing in immersive experiential adventures and hosting virtual presentations to travel destinations. EnchantingEscapes.net. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market remaining outside at Troy's Riverfront Park through Thanksgiving, Saturdays 8:30 to 2, taking orders online for Sunday pickups, troymarket.org. And Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts, specializing in black garlic and black garlic products with custom-made infused blends of sea salts and hot pepper blends, rollingrocksalt.com. Once again, thanks to Judy Patrick and Alan Shartok, who is having a tooth extraction as we speak. I hope you're listening. Get the left number three back there. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Jackie Orchard, our producer. Barb King took the calls today. Welcome back, Barb King. Have a great weekend, everybody. Be safe out there. We'll be back at 2 o'clock on Monday for a medical Monday. Neurologist Dr. David Hart will join us to discuss Alzheimer's disease. Great weekend, all. Stand by for the best of our knowledge.